You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
All right, everybody, welcome to another edition of Drinks with Johnny. I'm coming to you from the site of the 1982 World's Fair, and today I'm super excited. I am joined by a living legend himself from the pioneer band of rock and funk, Living Color. I'm joined by Corey Glover today. I'm super excited. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good, Johnny. How you been?
I've been great, man. Do you know where the 1982 World's Fair was held?
It wasn't St. Louis. That was Lexington, Kentucky, I believe.
No, you're close. You're in the right region. We're in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville, right.
Have you made your way out to Knoxville very often?
No, we were just out there, I think, with Extreme, actually.
Oh, right on, man.
Yeah.
So, I'm a huge fan. I'm fucking stoked to have you on here finally. Going back to almost a year ago now, we actually shared the stage together at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
That was our first time being there. I believe it was your guys' first time playing there too, right?
Right. You only had 20 minutes, but yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Oh, man. Wish we had more time there. That was kind of a shit show going on there, getting everything
loaded in. It was a madness the whole day.
Just bring it in. But did you get any chance to walk around MSG, or have you done that in the past?
I've done that in the past, and you know, we were there a couple of times. We played for a Knicks game with LeBron just before he left Cleveland.
Okay,
so that was good.
Right on, man. So, are you a big basketball fan then?
Not anymore. I used to be, and then you know. If you're a long-suffering Knicks fan, you can't be a basketball fan.
But, I mean, they're looking pretty good right now. Thibodeau's got them playing pretty good.
Not for right now. Just give it time. Don't fuck it up.
Sound like a true Knicks fan there, man.
Yeah.
Well, shit. I mean, I had a blast being there with you guys. I got to go out to front of house and watch some of the set. It was super awesome. I mean, you guys are just such an awesome band. And going back to when I was, you know, seeing you guys on MTV – first thing in the morning before I went to, you know, grade school, you know, being inspired by you guys. Just, it's so cool to share that stage with you and to now share this time with you here on the show, man.
Excellent.
Yeah, man. So I got wind of your new project coming out, Sonic Universe.
Yep.
And this is something that you put together with Mike Orlando on the Shiprocked cruise. Is that correct?
That's right. We were on Shiprocked in like 2018, and we were both stowaways. And so I got a chance to see him play, and I was, of course, blown away by his mastery of the guitar. And so I just struck up a conversation. My then manager introduced us, and we talked a little bit. We had a really good time. And before we got off the boat, we pledged to get together and do some writing. And, you know, he invited me over to his place. He lives in Staten Island. I went to his place, and we did some writing. And we got this thing together. We kept going, you know. Then the pandemic hit, and we got back to it. It was a thing.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm stoked you guys are doing it. I got the record sent to me. I know it's coming out May 10th.
Yes.
So everyone will go check that out when it comes out. I'm listening through this, man. I mean, you've always been with great players throughout your career, going back to Living Color and everything,
right.
and the different members that are coming in and out of there. You got in addition to Mike Orlando, I'm looking at it right now. You got Taekwon, Jackson, and Booker King. They all sound amazing on this record, man. I'm listening to it. It's like, it's still got, you know, it's got your voice, so that's always going to be something that's familiar for the listener.
Right.
But I mean, this is like really progressive rock in it, right? I mean, it's really progressive. I mean, you guys have always, you've always been in projects like that, you know, going back, you know, again, and it's always been progressive with a little bit of funk and stuff. This is almost like a shit, man, like a Dream Theater meets Living Color to me.
Yeah, you know, it's basically, you know, Adrenaline Mob meets Living Color.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, any Adrenaline Mob stuff, it's like fucking Jesus Christ. It spits rivets, as they say. And you know, my influence is a little different, and it gives a chance for, you know, Mike to really sort of stretch out as a guitar player and as a producer and as an arranger and everything else that he did on this record. He did everything but, you know, sing my parts. And it's amazing to hear, you know. It's a testament to his abilities.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he sounds amazing on it. Yeah, he did. He was with the Adrenaline Mob, a friend of mine who helped us out years ago. Mike Portnoy was in there with him, so I'm a little familiar with him from that. But again, the musicality, I mean, just going into like the last couple of songs, we'll start there. We'll kind of Tarantino this a little bit, if you don't mind.
Okay.
But you got I Want It All and Beautiful Disunity. Both of these songs are very like prog rock to me. Like, they're just going all out. I had a couple questions for you, though, more specifically. We'll get into everybody else playing on there. What is your vocal range at right now, man? Because you, like, fucking are soaring on these songs.
I don't know.
Were you classically trained? Do you do vocal lessons, stuff like that? Or, like, what's your process?
I've been taking vocal lessons my whole life, yeah. I've been singing since I was about 6 years old. And I've been in choirs and stuff like that, but I've had a vocal coach my whole career with Living Color, at least. Mm-hmm. From the beginning of Living Color, I've had a vocal coach. His name is Greg Drew.
Okay. And you never talk about the notes of like where, how high you're going or anything like that? It's just all ear.
Whatever I can get to that day is what it is.
Well, damn, it sounds fucking high as fuck. And then like,
yeah.
And then going into you know, the musicality again, everyone's just like, I mean, those two songs in particular, I mean, the whole album's like this, but like those songs in particular, you've got vocal solos, you got guitar solos, drum solos, bass solos, and sometimes it's all happening at the same fucking time.
Yeah, isn't that fun? That's the fun.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So, I mean, is it just, when you guys put together this project, we already talked about Shiprocked and talked about it, what was the goal in mind? Is it just to have fun and like just create the music and have fun? Or is there some kind of business acumen? Is there some kind of goal in there that you guys have specifically discussed?
No, we're having a good time, you know, wanted to see what would happen if the two of us got together and we made something. What would that look like? And we liked what we liked what we saw and we heard. You know, the first song we got together, and the first song we wrote was "I Am," which is the first song on the record.
Right, great song.
And it was like, well, this is good. What can we do next? And we did more, and you know, higher came out of it. I, you know, Mike wanted to do some something that has some a little gospel thing connected to it. And, you know, that's sort of like my wheelhouse. And Taquan is from Sworn Enemies, drummer from Sworn Enemy.
Right.
But before that, you know, he was, he played in his mother's church, you know, so he knows that kind of, he knows that kind of thing. So we have, so it kind of organically sort of came together and it worked. And we kept going, you know, every time we got something done, it's like, oh, that's good. Let's see what else we can do. What else is next? What else is, what else can work? And, you know, again, my hat goes off to Mike, because he comes up with these riffs and these grooves that are like, Jesus, like the fuck. It's amazing. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, man. I'm glad that you mentioned a couple things in there. Like Higher, definitely one of the points on the record that when I first listened through, I've listened through a few times now since I knew you're coming on the show. Mm-hmm. And got the advance of it. Higher, definitely one of the songs that sticks out. And you mentioned the groove, man. That's something that I know it's always great to, in prog rock, specifically or prog metal, that, you know, everyone's flashy, can play fast, can do everything like that, but right. It takes that next level when you can do it with the groove too, right?
Yeah, if you can hit a pocket and do all the things that you do in that pocket, you won, you know?
Absolutely, man. And you know something about pocket from your fucking past. I mean, geez, man, bringing funk to the metal world and everything like that.
Yeah.
Man, it's so cool. And I did mention Higher. That was one of the songs. So for me, when I'm listening through for the first time, I want to talk about the middle of the album. There's three songs right. that stood out to me. It started with My Desire, Whisper to a Scream, and Higher specifically. Those three right. in a row. Man, that was like when I was like, you know, the beginning starts off really energetic. You got like kind of like that, you know, that energetic prog, you know, kind of just going for it. You know, got a lot of heavy guitar riffs and stuff, right?
Right.
And then it's really when the dynamics of the album start to hit is right there in the middle to me with the with Desire. And the vocal melody that you start to build to for the outro. It comes up in the choruses, and then you start to really build into it for that bridge and outro. How did that song come about first?
It came up in pieces, really. Like, we had one piece of it, and it was like, oh, that's good. And then Mike went home, and Mike started fiddling with it and said, I got this other thing. And that's when he threw the prog shit in there. I was like, oh, that shit is right. That's right. That's absolutely right. Let's do it. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we wrote against that, and it turned into something. And then, you know, we started putting more stuff on it and putting stuff together and getting the melodies right and getting the build right for that kind of song. Cause it has a beginning, middle, and end, you know? So to really try to put the emphasis as to where it needs to be in each section, so it sort of builds to a certain to something new, right. You know.
Yeah, and you could hear that as it's going in the song. I was just wondering if it's in pieces, like were these parts for other songs or just riffs that like he was just like, oh, I can make these work together. You guys were like, I can make these work together.
Yeah, he basically he had that one. He had that one opening groove that was like really cool. I really dug that. And it's like, so what are we gonna do with it now? And he witch-headed it and came up with something else. And then and after that, came up with something else. And then went back to the beginning. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was great.
Yeah. And again, those vocal melodies. How did you come when you were approaching those? I mean, that's like to me, Desire has My Desire has probably the hookiest chorus on the record. I would say.
Yeah.
So how does that go? How do you come about writing something like that?
When you hear what you think is going to be the chorus and whatever comes to mind at that particular point in time. And I'm, you know, believe it or not, I don't have the greatest idea about melodies. I'm not really good with melodies sometimes. Wow. Sometimes my melodies sound like, you know, I feel like I'm a jazz singer trying to fit into the chord, and I'm trying to riff over, you know, the changes, but it has to be something more than that. And he, you know, Mike has a real sort of panache for doing that, and has a penchant for really making things that, you know, people like these hooky sort of melodies that are great, you know? So again, my hat's off to him.
Dude. Well, I'm glad you mentioned like a little bit of jazz there too, because that takes me to the next song that I definitely thought took another field is following right up to it, is Whisper to a Scream. It's got some jazz elements in there, man. Like
it does. I mean, it's in an effort to really try to, you know, we're really trying to make like a rock ballad, and it turned out to be sort of like this weird sort of prog jazz sort of thing that's really, really loud. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you said rock ballad, because you feel that in it too. The the feeling of the song is very rock ballady, but right. when you get into what you guys are actually doing with the notes and the groove is very jazz, and it's I love that melding of the two, and how you guys go about getting it. And then of course, as a bassist, I'm listening to Booker on songs like that, just grooving, and I'm like, oh, this is it right here. This is it.
Oh yeah, well, you know that. You know, Booker plays with everybody, has played with everybody. So he has to know when to change it up. Mm. You know, pocket bass player really, really gets it. Really, you can hear him between the hi-hats and the kick drum. But what he really shines is that he's very versatile, you know, so we could go from something like, you know, higher to Whisper to a Scream to Beautiful Disunity, and without any, and it doesn't faze him at all. Like he doesn't have it doesn't push his buttons. You know, very few things push Booker's buttons. You don't want to push Booker's buttons because he's a big motherfucker.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
I'll try my best. Right.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
Wherever you're listening to this podcast, make sure you're subscribed and leave us a 5-star review. If you want to listen to this show ad-free, head over to drinkswithjohnny.com and become a premium member. You'll get to enjoy unreleased clips from your favorite guests, discounts on merchandise in our shop, and access to our private Discord server where you can chat one-on-one with Johnny Christ himself.
Awesome!
So stay tuned, stay thirsty, and stay filthy as fuck.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
But when you guys are, recording this, what was the recording process like? You guys went out to Mike's place in Staten Island?
Yeah, we did the whole thing in Staten Island, basically.
Okay.
You know, We set up Taquan's drums in there. Booker came in and laid down some tracks. You know, it was all done out of Sonic Stomp, and it was incredible. He's got a great setup in there. Sounds amazing in there. Mike's got an amazing set of ears. So he did all of that. He mixed it really nice. It mixed it beautifully. It sounds really good. It's got a real sort of ambient tone to it. It's all digital, really, but it has some sort of like, it has some air in it, which is hard to get sometimes in some of these newer recordings.
Right, man. So, but when you say you guys came in, did you guys come in individually at different times to lay it down, or were you guys all in the room a lot? Like, what was that?
The most part, people came in individually. Like, we set down certain things and put placeholders in there, and then they came in and put their parts on it, pretty much.
Okay, so I asked that question because going back to Booker, I'm wondering like where he's finding the spots and stuff. Are you like in the engineer room and he's out there and you're just watching him, just going, whoa.
He's standing behind us in the booth in the control room, and it was like, you know what to do. Just press play and record, and he knows what to do. Wow. You know, he's great at that.
Was that kind of the case for each of you guys then too? Is everyone just kind of trust each other? I mean, you guys have all done such amazing things and had great careers.
Absolutely.
Before.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's not like we've not done this before. You know, these are all, yeah. Everybody in that room is a veteran, you know, so they know what they want to do, and they know what they need from us, you know.
Yeah. Do you find that to be kind of a relief in this super group setting like this, or has that been the case for you for many years? I mean, you've worked with a lot of great musicians.
I've worked with some really good musicians. I've worked with some very mediocre musicians. I've worked with everybody. and you know, the reason why these people were brought on was because they knew what the assignment was. They knew exactly what was necessary to make this work. So, yeah.
Wow, man. I mean, and speaking of everyone you worked with, I mean, Living Color has worked with hip hop artists too, R&B artists, rock mm-hmm. artists, like from every genre. What were some of the times when you look back on it from today? Just talking about recording processes and collabs and everything like that. What were some of your like fondest memories, I guess?
Fondest memories. It's weird. It was, you know, there were times in the very beginning we were working with Mick Jagger, and you know, he's playing harmonica on a song called Broken Hearts on the first record, you know, and just to sit there in the control room and he's in the booth. And, you know, that's Mick Jagger playing harmonica over there. You know, that's really, really strange. It's really weird. Or having Dougie Fresh come in and do some beatbox stuff on some stuff. Or Queen Latifah that we've had on there. Or Chuck and Flav we've had on some records. You know, and just to have them around, you know, and do some really interesting sort of bits and pieces. We did some stuff at Run DMC. We worked with a bunch of people, with a lot of folks over the years. I was singing with Galactic from New Orleans, the jam band from New Orleans, and that brought me in front of a bunch of people that I never thought I'd ever meet, like Bay Lavelle and people like that, doing the Hendrix tributes and playing Carlos Alomar and you know, Mike Garson and, you know, those kind of people. You know, it's taken me far, a lot of places, taken to a whole lot of places.
And do you find like each time you work with these guys, I mean, you're talking about early, I mean, first of all, like Mick Jagger, you know, being right. on your first record with Living Color, like, I mean, how does that, first of all, how the fuck does that happen? I'll get to my next question.
we were just the beginning of the thing. We were still like a local band playing in New York City, playing at CBGB's all the time. And we're looking for, we're trying to get a deal, you know, that kind of thing. And Vernon got a call from Robert Fripp, from from some of the guys from Rolling Stone, said that Jagger's looking for a guitar player for his record. He's doing a solo record, Primitive Cool, and would he mind coming down to audition? And we actually, I came with him to the audition in the city. And at the time, what was very interesting is Doug Wimbish, who plays bass with us now, was in that band. And, you know, he came out and talked to us and he was like, so what are you guys doing next? He's like, well, we're playing CBGB's next weekend. If you want to come through, please, you know, be our guest. And he did come with Jeff Beck
wow,
to see us play. And after the show, he was like, if there's anything I can do for you, just please let me know. It was like, sure, just whatever. And he said, you know what? I'm working in the city. I'm mixing my record here in the city. I have the whole studio to myself. Why don't you guys come on up and we'll do some demos and see if that helps. It's like, cool. So we went up to Right Tracks Recording Studio on 48th Street. And we recorded Which Way to America and Glamour Boys. And that basically got us our deal, you know? And so when we got in the studio to work on some stuff, it was like, sure, you mind coming in? And, you know, we really wanted him to sing background on something, like on Glamour Boys. And he's like, why don't I play harmonica? It's like, sure, we play harmonica. Whatever the fuck you want to do, it's your fucking Mick Jagger. You can do whatever you want to. And so he played. So he played harmonica on Broken Hearts.
Dude, that's a wild story that like just doesn't happen though. You know, like you're playing CBGBs and Mick Jagger and Jeff Beck actually show up first of all, and then they offer their Mick Jagger rather offers his services, but then actually follows through with it. I mean, you know, right. You and I both know that you've ran into people and you say some kind words and stuff, but the fact that he followed through with it, just like that's got to show the man's character.
I mean, at the time, he was the biggest rock star in the world.
Oh yeah.
I mean, at that particular point in time, there were no other rock stars, like true real rock stars, more bigger than Mick Jagger. And you know, for him to be as gracious as he was an amazing thing. Like this I tell the story all the time. We're in the studio and I'm talking to him and we're talking and I'm just getting into the blues. Like I'm obsessed with Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and all this other stuff. And I'm talking to him about it. And a day later, he comes back and hands me a cassette. Like he went home and made me a mixtape.
Whoa.
I got a mixtape from Mick Jagger. And it's like super blues and all this other stuff. All these things that amazing pieces of music.
You got a mixtape from Mick Jagger. Do you still have his mixtape? Tell me you held on to it.
I think I still have it around here somewhere.
That's incredible, man. I think he's probably only gave that to a few like girls along the way, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure. Right. Fuck him. That was really good, you know?
So, but you said that you were just getting into blues at the time. So, I mean, this is while you guys are recording your first record and you're just getting into blues. What were some of your influences before that? Like, let's go back then and talk a little bit about your influences and what brought you to that first record.
Well, you know, I listened to a lot, whatever my family was listening to. You know, there's a generation gap, obviously, between my parents and my siblings. So they were listening to Santana and my parents were listening to Miles Davis. And then they got together and when they got to like Bitches Brew and they were like, they both kind of dug that, you know? So I was listening to that kind of stuff. So, and I was way into Bill Withers, I was way into Al Green. I was way into, you know, Michael McDonald when he was with the Doobie Brothers. I was way into Led Zeppelin. I was really kind of and in the neighborhood I grew up in there's a major Caribbean influence, so I heard a lot of reggae and I heard a lot of proto dance hall, what was gonna become dance hall, like MC and Chatters and that kind of stuff. So it was a mixed bag of a whole bunch of stuff.
I have so many follow-up questions to that. So first of all, like, how many siblings do you have?
I have a brother and a sister. They're both older than I am.
So you're the youngest of three. I'm the youngest of three as well. Got two older brothers. Yeah. They introduced me to music. I understand. When you're saying all that, I'm like, oh yeah, like that's exactly how it happens, right?
Yeah.
And what was okay? Go ahead. Sorry.
No. Just to say, they sort of took me under the wing, and my family were very musically inclined. Like the stereo was on all the time, and they listened to everything, anything and everything they could get their hands on. And, you know, my brother was the singer of the family, really, at the time. Like, he was a major, my brother really, really was a really, really good singer. And so there was that sibling rivalry that was going on between he and I. It's like, you know, whatever he could do, I could do better. That kind of shit that was going on all the time. So,
that's it. Dude, that silver rivalry's got to be awesome, though. I mean, think about it. Yeah. Like, he's your older brother. You know, I could do that, too. I understand that dynamic, too. Real quick question on that. If he was the guy that you were competing with in the household, did anyone else in your family go on to do some music and... on any level there?
Not really. It was mostly me. Like, my brother was a singer, my sister was an actor, and I became both. You know, because I couldn't think of anything else to do.
Well, everyone's glad about that, though. I mean, you know. you mentioned the acting real quick. I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with your acting career as well. What should I be checking out after this chat here?
I was in the movie Platoon.
Oh shit!
And I did a few smaller indie films that are hard to find.
I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.